once, I'm sure.
So long from...
...with Aeroport Seat.
...a lot of trouble.
That's right, that's right.
Ted Williams, the manager of the Senators, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. Here at the reunion of the 1950 Miami University football team and the cradle of coaches, I'm talking with Ira Parsegian, the head coach at Notre Dame. And Ira, you preceded this 1950 class by a few years, didn't you?
Yes, my first return to Miami was right after the war, 1946. I played here in 1947. And then I signed with the Cleveland Browns, played in 48 and 49 with the Browns, and then returned as a freshman coach for this 50 team. Not this 50 team, but I was a freshman coach during that period of time when Woody was the head coach of this group.
And then you became head coach, didn't you? And John Pont was your freshman coach.
Well, what happened was that Woody went to Ohio State, Woody Hayes, in 1951, in early 1951, and I became the head coach. John Pont was actually a player in 1951, his senior year. He went to Canada and played for a year or so, and then I brought him back as the freshman coach, I think it was 1953. And then I left here in 1955, and John Pont became the head football coach in 1956. So that's the order that the coaches fell in.
And on your staff here, Bruce Beatty wasn't here, and Doc Urich. Was he those two on your staff, along with Perino Woody Wills?
Yes, Woody Wills, and of course Doc Urich stayed with me up until, it was 1965. He went to Northwestern for 8 years and went on to Notre Dame and then left in 1965 for the University of Buffalo, and now, of course, he's at Northern Illinois. Bruce Beatty was with me at Miami and then also at Northwestern, and then stayed at Northwestern when I went to Notre Dame, and then he's with the Boston Patriots. I still have two coaches from Miami on my staff, Tom Pagna, who played for me here, and also Paul Schultz, who was a teammate of mine here.
Pagna's the poet, isn't he? Isn't he the poet laureate?
Well, he's more than that. He's an outstanding football coach. He's a writer. He's a poet. He's a man with many talents, really. And I'm sure that in time to come, more people will hear of him.
This is a great story. Miami is not one of the higher colleges football-wise nationally, but yet... in its category, there's none finer. A losing record has not been upon the school since the war years, really. Have you been able to just pinpoint the reason why so many great coaches have come out of here?
Well, I don't think there's any one specific reason. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think, and not necessarily weighted in importance, I think success breeds success. It's self-perpetrating now because so many coaches have come out and have hired other Miami coaches, and the thing sort of supports itself. But I think it's possibly the type of athlete, student, and general type of personality that Miami attracts. It's a beautiful setting. It's a beautiful environment. I think there's an excellent academic status here that exists today that also existed years ago. My association, of course, is post-war. But there's the Weave Eubanks and the Paul Browns and the Smokey Alstons and the Red Blakes and on down through that that made their names having graduated from Miami. And, of course, the post-war years, which included Sue Holcomb, which started to coach here, and then Sid Gilman, which took over and had a remarkable career as a coach. And then you springboard into the era of the Paul Dietzels, who has done a remarkable job in his coaching. He's been a coach of the year, and of course, John Pont. You can go right on down the line, as you well know, and it's been a great experience for me, really.
I know Jay Colville says you can't just worry about Miami on a Saturday afternoon, but you've got to look at the paper the next day, and how did Notre Dame do, how did Indiana do, Dayton, right on down the line. And we're here to honor Jay Colville this weekend. He's a fellow that's been here from the beginning, and there isn't really any like Jay, is there?
Well, Jay has been a great influence on my life. He was my trainer as a player, so that you have that association. Then I had the good fortune of being the coach at Miami, and had the observation of watching him work as a trainer. Then I came back, and I have come back a number of times to Miami as an alumnus, and have watched Jay. And he has a great number of talents. Not just one thing. Jay is a combination of many things. You couldn't describe Jay in just one word or one sentence. He's a great trainer. He's a great instructor, a great teacher, a great philosopher, a great landscaper, a guy that's a great hunter, great fisherman. You know, there's so many things that Jay's been involved with. This is the way I remember him best. And for him to be retiring from Miami is a loss to Miami in many ways. But still, his accomplishments will be well remembered for many years here at this campus.
I think Paul Dietzel phrased that he's just a bit of Miami familia, as familiar as Slant Walk and Toby's Run.
That probably describes it as well as anybody could.
Errol, I can't let you escape without talking a little bit about football today. Your team is fresh from the Cotton Bowl now. You've lost some top defensemen, but seems like the Irish will be strong again.
Well, it's hard to determine just exactly how good we'll be. The schedule influences your success. Injuries influence your success. I think we'll be a solid football team, barring any unforeseen injuries. We do have Joe Theismann back, our quarterback, who is a scrambling-type quarterback, which gives you exciting plays, makes the coach nervous on the sideline, but makes exciting plays. And Joe's done a great job for us. We have some returning kids, but we've also lost the great services of Mike McCoy, our great tackle, and Bobo Olsen, our middle linebacker, defensively, which will be very difficult to replace. But all in all, the one thing that we sort of count on is the Miami spirit and tradition, which I became accustomed to as a player and as a coach, but also the great Notre Dame tradition. And whether you realize it or not, regardless of physical ability, handicaps, shortcomings, that proud and great tradition can carry you through some very tough, difficult situations. And we're hopeful that at Notre Dame this year, if we're unfortunate with the injury picture or playing a masterful opponent, that maybe that tradition will come through and help us out.
I know Coach the other day went on and said that kids today are just as much disciplined as any other. Have you noted that there's a tendency not to win one for the Gipper, that the kids are changing a little bit, or do you still think they'll come around and submit to the discipline?
Well, I don't know. I think styles and fads change, and they go back. I've seen, you know, the broad tie, the thin tie, the bell-bottom pants, the tight cuff pants, you know, the broad shoulders, the thin lapels. These are styles. They change and fad. But basically, the overall youngster is a well-disciplined guy. There's a handful that are dissenters that create problems, destruction, and they're wrong. But basically, I think the overall American today, the high school graduate, the college graduate, the youngster of today is a fine, well-groomed, well-disciplined, well-instructed young person. And I've observed this because I go to high school banquets, I go to college affairs. But there is a handful that are the dissenters, and unfortunately the press and the news media focuses on the dissenters. And therefore you read and hear more about them than you do anybody else. But that's a minority group, and they are influencing far more greatly than they should for the percentage number that they represent.
Exactly right, and thank you very much, Eric Parsegian, the head coach at Notre Dame, for being with us.
Fine, thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, before today's game, it's a pleasure to be talking with one of the broadcasters of the Minnesota Twins, Halsey Hall, who is an institution, and he always says, maybe I should be in one, huh, Halsey?
When I was going to hear at the gathering of the 1950 Miami University football team and coaches who have gone on to great things,
it's a pleasure to be talking with John Pont, the only man who's ever had his uniform number retired here at Miami University. And Coach, from Miami to Yale and to Indiana now, you're making the rise just like some of the great ones.
Well, it's been interesting all the way along the line, but I guess really just what's happening tonight is what it's all about, the people, and I think, you know, just like anything else, any person's success is due more in part to what other people have done for him. And there are a great many people in this room who have helped me. Woody Hayes, Eric Parsegian, Bo Schembecker from Michigan. He and I are roommates. I see Fritzy Heisler from the Cleveland Browns, and I can think of the times that I've gone to the Browns camp and talked football with him. So really, you know, the world still goes on. At least I believe that, where you're not going to do it on your own. People are just going to have to help you along the way, and thank goodness we've had a good group of people at Miami.
Regarding that cradle of coaches, Eric Parsegian just said success breeds success. It's really hard to pinpoint why so many great ones out of the same general area of class there in the early 50s and late 40s.
Oh, I don't think, really, this is hard. Where could you pinpoint it? You know, how did it all start? And I don't think, really, that it's a magical thing wherein, you know, all of a sudden you wake up in the morning, you find out that, boom, you know, look at all these great people. Well, not great people, but good coaches. I think, really, it was a slow, steady process, just like building a football team or a program. I think the good programs are ones that are based on solid things, and I think one thing that stands out as far as Miami is concerned and the coaches is loyalty. Harris said that one thing, you know, success breeds success, but to me, I agree with that, but as well, this aspect of loyalty, and Woody Hayes is here, and we were talking about another aspect, the idea that at Miami, the athletes just work. You don't have to, you know, kick them in the seat of the pants and get them to work. Now, we made mistakes, but we didn't shirk, you know, running, and we didn't beg off, and we didn't try to hide in the locker room. We all knew what we had to do, and we just did our best, and we worked like the devil. We made our mistakes, and I think if you combine hard work with loyalty, not only to an institution, but to a coaching staff and to players within a group, I think you're going to come up on the long end of it just about all the time. And, you know, I think this might be happening throughout the country today. I think something that the younger generation might be missing, to me, are the intrinsic values that we talk about, that we teach in sports. Why do people have a strong affection for, you know, others? These things, I think, are tremendously important. And we have a loyalty to an institution. We're not trying to tear the doggone thing down. Now, I don't like everything that's happening in Indiana, but I'm sure as heck I'm not going to close the doors and try to change it all over. I think that we've got more good things there than we have bad things, but we're going to change things within the system simply because this is the way to do it. So, I don't know. This group here is something special. And, you know, when you find all of a sudden that they've taken time away to come and break bread, and just like they're doing tonight, just enjoying themselves, it shows that, really, we learned to respect and like each other when we were at Miami.
And these Miami men didn't start at the top by any means. Eubank was McGuffey a freshman. You were what, freshman coach under Era here?
Yeah, Era brought me in. I was playing football up in Canada and professional football. He asked me to come down, and I accepted the job of head freshman coach and head basketball coach, and I knew nothing about basketball, for $3,200. That was my salary. But money didn't mean that much to me. I wanted a coach, and I wanted a coach at Miami. And I can think of the others. Era got hurt when he was playing with the Cleveland Browns, and Woody brought him back as a freshman coach. And then when I left, Bo Schembecker took over, and Bo Schembecker and Bill Mallory had been together, and Bill Mallory is here now. But I think this is that idea of close camaraderie that we have among each other, and that we're going to push each other as far as jobs are concerned, but at the same time, we're going to be competitive with each other. We have to play against Bo, and we're going to have to recruit against Era. I have to play against Woody, and as much as I respect them, I'm going to do as much as I possibly can to be a better football coach so we can beat them on Saturday afternoon, and I think they're this way, and quite possibly this is another reason why all of them have been extremely successful, is that they are competitive by nature.
There was a story that you owed a lot to Richard Nixon for your move from Yale to Indiana because you had been deliberating it. And then he says, go ahead and take it.
Well, I think it's a little bit like his Cambodia, and I don't want to get involved with politics, Ted, but I believe this. You know, he said, this was my decision. I had to make it. It was my future politically, but it's something that I felt had to be done. But I do feel this, that President Nixon asked the people who are most in the know about whether or not this move should be made, and those are the people who, you know, they're fighting it. They're in Vietnam. They're fighting the war, and they probably felt that, look, we have to go into Cambodia. But he had to make the decision to permit the troops to go there, understanding that he's going to take an awful lot of flack if he did this. Well, he told me the same thing in New York. And we were sitting there, Otto Graham and myself and Cy Lauder from Dayton, Ohio, and we had just played a round of golf, and Dick was talking really to Otto Graham. And he said, I think a person owes it to his profession to accept the challenge. If you have talent, if you have ability, and you sit back and don't use those abilities to better a situation or a program, you're wrong. And he was talking about Otto and professional football and me being at Yale. And, you know, and I thought about this all along, and I felt then that we were at Yale. We were very secure. Indiana hadn't won. They had been on probation and had quite a few problems. And I felt that we could contribute something to the game of football. Football had been awfully good to me. I wouldn't be really where I am now, you know, talking on, you know, the Armed Service Network. I wouldn't have received the acclaim as a football coach that I received had it not been for my participation in football as a player. And I think sometimes we owe it to the sport. And I felt that, well, if we go to Indiana University, we can prove that we can win the way we did at Miami with good players. By that I mean good people. Then it's going to help the coaching profession. And this is what it was all about. But I wouldn't have done so had not President Nixon spoken to me that way on the golf course.
1967 was some year, and I know last year was sort of a disappointment, though, wasn't it? Because these boys were all seniors, Eisenbarger and Butcher and Harry Gunson.
Well, that was, there's no question about it, Ted, it was. And we were in pretty good shape. We're going into the last three ball games of the season, and we're 3-1 in the conference. With three ball games to go, and we honestly feel that we've got things going because we had just beaten Michigan State 16-0, and then we were hit by a boycott. And here again, it gets back to this idea, I think, of total dedication and loyalty. And I think really that, I think we were all penalized. We all suffered. The black athletes suffered. The coaching staff suffered. But, you know, we had a group of fine seniors who would have loved to have left Indiana University as winners. And as a result, they ended up with a 4-6 record, and this goes into the books. And I honestly felt that it was conceivable that this ball club could have been co-champions or tri-champions or whatever the case may be in the Big Ten. So I think really what it all boils down to, it was a very disheartening experience in all respects because nobody won. The Gonzos, the Eisenbargers, the Butchers, who had done so much for Indiana University, they most certainly lost. I think the black athletes lost. And I don't think the football coaches want a thing out of the whole doggone mess. I think that if we've learned anything, it's another experience in life, and we've learned from that. And, boy, this society sure changes.
Do you think it's going to go down before it starts to make the turn and goes up to what it was? Or are we going to have more protesting and so forth in athletics?
I don't really know, Ted. This is something that no person really can say this is what is going to happen. Or anything like that. I guess really the best thing you can do is just go year by year. I think, you know, there was a time when you can really plan your program for 2 or 3 years, but I don't think this is the case anymore. I think our society is in such a state of flux. You know, the House now has passed this law on 18-year-olds. Well, this is going to make a change in the political structure in the United States. So what's going to happen here? Then what do you do with universities? Do you then give the 19-year-old a very strong voice in administrating, a university in the programs within the university, within the School of Arts and Science and what have you? How far are you going to go along with all of this? I think it still comes down to responsibility. So, you know, what is it at IU? I think you're just going to play year by year, but I do feel this as far as our spring ball went. I don't know. We've got a fine group of football players. They're fine young men, and I think they recognize what happened last fall, and they recognize the fact that everybody gets hurt. So I think what they've really settled down to do during the spring is play football, and if they want to get involved politically with other activities on campus, they can do so, but don't let this affect football. Because, you know, you might have a guard who couldn't care less about what student government is going to do. Well, I think he has a right to play football, and I don't think another football player has a right to take away this player's chance for success by using football as a political move to gain, you know, some advantages other ways. And I think we resolved ourselves at IU, at least I hope so, that we're going to play football this fall, and it could be a good football team. It really can be.
That was a great story regarding relations of the ball players and the coaches between you and Gonzo on the sidelines that time when he wanted a certain ball player to remain in the game and you wanted him out.
Oh, yeah, that was Eisenbarger, Ted. And it actually happened in the Michigan ball game in our Rose Bowl year, and John had really blown one, and he ran with a ball from fourth, you know, on fourth down, and I just really got upset over the thing, and I was going to bench Eisenbarger, and Harry came in, and there was about 4 minutes in the ball game. He said, Neil, this is a sophomore, 19 years old. And he said, Coach, I'd like to have John in the ball game with me. Well, there was something about the way he said it, and I think maybe it gets back to this other problem, said, you know, the students on, you know, throughout. Harry was not demanding. He was saying, Coach, I'd like to have him. And he was saying it in such a way wherein he understood a little bit more about John Eisenbarger than I did, because he roomed with John Eisenbarger. But he didn't come in and say, Coach, I want Eisenbarger, or I'm not going to play. He just says, Coach, I'd like to have John play the ball game. And we put John in, and John gained 59 of the 80 yards and scored the winning touchdown after really making a big mistake. So here again, I think it's evidence that I think if things are taken in proper perspective, I think people will go along. And I think you mentioned something here, Ted, or you brought up a point with our football team in 70. This is the one thing that we're not very sure of. We have good athletes. They're well-skilled and well-versed in playing football. The only thing we don't know is how they're going to acquit themselves in a key situation. You know, the third down on defense, the second down and goal on about the 8-yard line. You know, do you make the big play? Late in the ball game, do you come up with a thing that continues to move the football? Physically, I think we're in good shape. I don't know about this one particular aspect, but if we've done any kind of job of recruiting and teaching our players what football is all about, I think they'll measure up quite well.
Well, they probably don't even know themselves how they'll react in a situation confronts them.
Really, and honestly, I prefer it this way. I think sometimes if you think so much about certain things like that, you get bugged by it. And I like the naturalness of football. We're all involved with a pressure bit and what have you. So, okay, practice as hard as you possibly can. And the moments in sports wherein a game is going to be won or lost will be decided in the ball game. You sure as heck, you know, you can't go to bed at night and say, well, now I can just foresee tomorrow being, you know, third down and one in a situation like that. I don't sleep that way anymore. I just sort of go to sleep on Friday night.
Your hair's already turned white, huh?
No, actually, that happened when I was a player, Ted, and Woody Hayes did it. No, but I actually was gray when I was playing football. I had been in the service, and I came to college after I had been in the service, and I'm just prematurely gray. And the only thing I'm thankful for, it's not falling out. It's gray, it's staying there, although I don't have the bushiest hair in the world.
Well, Johnny Fine, it's been a real treat to talk to you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Ted.
The 1950 Miami University football team and its coaches are being honored at Miami University, along with retiring trainer Jay Colville, who was there from the beginning of time, I think. And it's a pleasure to be talking with one of the members of this team, Bo Schembechler, who led his team to the Rose Bowl and the Big Ten Championship. I don't think anybody but Fielding Yost had ever done that. Had they in their first year?
Well, Ted, that's what they say. And, of course, I feel fortunate that when I went to Michigan, we had some real fine football players to work with, and things moved along a lot faster than we ever anticipated. And by mid-season, we had developed into a real good football team, and we just went on from there.
Looking across this room now at Woody Hayes, he was the man that started you off practically on your career, and you had the pleasure of beating him to get into the Rose Bowl, and he's been a big man in your life in football.
Well, of course, I played 2 years for Woody here at Miami. And then I coached a year as a graduate assistant after I left Miami. And then later on came back and coached 5 years as his line coach at Ohio State. So I think any time you're associated with a guy for 8 years in intimately and on his staff, why, and as a player, why, I'm sure a lot of the things have rubbed off on me.
You were always a man of dedication as a football player. Did you ever think that so many of your teammates on that squad would go into the big-time coaching ranks as they have?
But Ted, of course, you never know about something like that. Most of the fellows on the 50 team were vitally interested in football. Many of them were studying for the coaching profession. And I think it was just a matter of we were fortunate enough to maybe to be at the right places at the right time. And I think one of the things that we learned here that has helped us an awful lot is you have to have a total dedication to this game, not just during the season, but you have to do a lot of work in the off season. You have to keep abreast of football. You have to believe in the game and the value of it to the youngsters who play it. And it's a combination of all those things wrapped up into one, I think, that so many have gone out and been successful in the coaching profession.
Well, you coach as you played very hard and no holes barred. On your recruiting missions now, what do you think of when you see some of the high school talent, the way they dress and their hair? Does it affect you, or don't you see that much of it in sports?
Well, I don't think we see quite as much of it as you do on the campus in general, Ted. And the fellows that we recruit, of course, I think the most important factor in recruiting a youngster today is to determine just how badly he wants to succeed at football. You see, there are so many distractions on the college campus today. There's so many organizations, there's so many things that they can get involved in. Politics is big on the campus. And there's no way that a youngster can go to school, be engaged in a lot of other activities, and play football also. There has to be a priority list for him. First of all, it has to be academic. Second of all, it has to be football. And then third, he can do most anything he likes as long as it doesn't, you know, interfere with those first two. And I think as long as a youngster keeps his priorities in view, there's no need for an athlete on a college campus to feel that he doesn't have an opportunity to enter in politics or in any other activities on the campus. But he's got to do it in a lesser degree than someone who is not participating in football.
Bo, you were really caught up in a lot of hoopla and so forth last year regarding the win over Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship. Did you feel yourself just coming to a point where you had to crack or regarding this heart attack, something that probably stunned you?
Well, of course, you know, you never anticipate anything like that. And I think I don't feel that it was because of the tenseness involved in the season or the preparation for the Rose Bowl game. I think it was a matter that I was so intent on being successful at Michigan that I didn't take care of myself. I had always been the type of a guy who worked out and played a lot of handball, did a lot of running. And for a year there at Michigan, I was unable to do that. And I had put on quite a bit of weight. And just one thing led to another, and before you know it, I was down with a heart attack. But I think I've got those priorities in the proper perspective now, and I'm working to keep myself in shape, and I think I can take care of myself from now on.
Well, it was no secret that the club on New Year's Day was not the same club that played Ohio State. They looked a little unorganized out there, and did you watch the game from your bed in the hospital?
No, as a matter of fact, there was no way. I was ruled out of the game about 2 years, 2 hours before the kickoff, and there was no way that I could watch the game or even... I got the results of it after the game was over. But it is true. I don't think that the team was disorganized. I think it took something out of them. I think more than anything else, that they didn't know what really happened to me. And they knew it had to be something serious because, of course, I wasn't at the game. And they played as well as they're capable of playing. And I think people underestimate, Ted, that we were playing one of the great football teams in the country. In Southern California, a tremendous defensive team, and I think our boys performed about as well as we could expect.
You really must have established a rapport with, like the quarterback, Don Moorhead, who was all broken up about everything and probably couldn't concentrate as much as he would have if everything was right.
And Don's a great football player and a great competitor and a great leader for us, and naturally, I suppose, on any football team, you get closer to your quarterback than any other player, and I'm sure it had some effect because we had talked and done much of the work on the sidelines as the game goes along. And from that standpoint, I think maybe perhaps he did miss the fact that I wasn't in.
You installed a lot of the same things that you had at Miami, the rollout quarterback and the big fullback. Is this the way it's going to be again this fall?
Well, I don't think so, Ted. Of course, Moorhead is back, and we feel blessed to have a great quarterback like that. We don't have the big back this year. We have a lot of good running backs in the 195-pound class. We don't have the big, strong fullback. We may have to change our attack somewhat. But we still have a strong defense coming back, and that's where you win and lose, and we'll work around the fact that we don't have the big fullback offensively.
Well, Bo, it's real nice to see you again. A little trimmer and hopefully a lot healthier. Thank you very much.
Nice talking to you, Ted.
All right.